Who else in Maine radio is giving you the subtle stylings of Portugal the Man?
Actually, probably a lot of people.
Yeah?
It's a really popular song.
This is?
Yeah.
I've never heard this.
I actually felt like kind of a sellout for like requesting this, but it just seems so obvious that how could I go wrong?
Is this a current song?
Like most hits, it's probably been out for, I imagine, a year and a half, 2 years. Oh. You know, every time I actually hear about a song, it's definitely been, you know, released
right.
on an album or whatever. But I mean, I'll put it this way. This was a piece that was done for the adult contemporary dance class at the Thomas School of Dance in their recital. So if it's being used for middle-aged folks dancing at the Thomas School recital, it's been around and it's been out. But
it came out in 2017.
Yeah, see, it's wicked catchy. But I did feel a little guilty. But then I reminded myself that I didn't really have much time today between heat stroke and all these other things
to
reference a lot of other Portuguese things. So so all you out there in Radio Land, instead of Portugal the Man, we're talking about Portugal the place today on our world tour. You know, we've been we started in France and we migrated south to the Iberian Peninsula. Which, of course, encompasses both Spain and Portugal. And we've been talking a lot about the different aspects of Spanish winemaking and some of the grapes. What's up?
I'm reading. It's Billboard charted.
Yeah. I know.
How did I miss that? Good Lord.
Here's the thing about...
It was huge. It went to number four on the Billboard charts 2 years ago.
It's been in commercials. It's so overplayed indeed that I definitely felt guilty. But that's what's funny to me right now is because you reference number one hits from the last 50 years that I have to look up but this one's
and usually because teaching school I tend to pick up on what the kids are listening to.
And I, you know, what's funny though, the kids who definitely catch a lot of sort of cultural reference points these days, it's starting to be where it's not only, you know, the influence of dad's and mom's music, but like I'll hear them listening to other stuff like, oh yeah, I listened to this at my friend's house or whatever. So now I'm starting to have to be like, what are we listening to? What are the kids listening to? And my kids have not listened to that or, you know, brought it home. No, I'm not suggesting that my children are the end all and be all arbiters of musical taste. I assure you they're not. I'm working on it.
At least it's not Baby Shark.
Occasionally it is.
Oh,
my son especially, they know how much it irritates us. so they just do that. That's purely an irritant.
Yeah,
I don't think they actually like it. But it's definitely one of those that it has not made its way into the Meehan household, which is good because repeated listenings will drive you mad.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is true about anything.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to my band is trying to select some new tunes, and my wife and I happened to put on CNC Music Factory, Gonna Make You Sweat this morning in search for something, you know, because we do like Ride With Me from Nelly, and we do a mashup of Wild Thing and Push It. We do some like hip hop stuff, which is wicked awkward and funny, but everybody up here seems to like it. For obvious reasons, because we're all white as white can be. And so I was listening to Gun You Make You Sweat, and I'm like, wow, this is a terrible song. I mean, after a couple measures...
Well, it's the first 20 seconds, and then you're like, okay.
It's literally the same song over and over, and I'm sure it makes a lot of sense when you're 4:30 a.m. sweating in a club and something like that, and you don't really care if it's like intelligent lyrics like, you know, Bob Dylan or anything. It's just... But it was particularly atrocious. So there you go. But I owned the album, and I remember the controversy. Oh yeah, sure. I owned a lot of albums that I willingly fess up to, but I beg people not to hold against me.
If you do this live,
I had the New Kids on the Block Christmas album.
Oh my!
I didn't ask for it, but it was good.
Who in your band? Who in 161 will do that? Everybody dance now.
I don't know. Because I'm afraid to.
Yeah.
It's a work
in
progress.
I'll create a sample for you, and you can just have your keyboard guy sample. You
know? We don't have a keyboard guy. So if you can find us a keyboard guy. We've talked about sampling and stuff in the past.
Do you have a guitar?
No, I'll record it, and you can just you know, you just play it. Play it in the mic.
There you go.
I'll just on a Sony Walkman
to really complete the image.
I can get my voice that high.
Nice.
I don't want to do it right now because I need preparation.
Then I'd have to pay you royalties. I can't afford your prices. Back to Portugal.
Back to
the
Portugal.
Place.
Not the man.
So I usually subtitle this segment, Who's Got the Matus? But I don't have the Matus. Although I can special order it for you in case you're interested in either Matus or Lancers. A lot of people got started drinking wine in this country on Matus and Lancers. Those are Portugal was very famous back in the 70s and 80s for these spritzy rosés that people still consider, like when I suggest a rosé, like, like Matus? Like, no, not really like Matus. But they weren't terrible wines in as much as they were, you know, they were an attempt to get Americans drinking what Europeans tend to drink, which is more low alcohol and fun, you know, spritzy, in point of fact, is what we're going to be drinking today, sort of. You know, it's there's things that are quaffable and fun, and then there's serious wines, and I think that was a good entry point for a lot of other people. Their entry points were worse. Blue Nun that we referenced when we were talking about Germany, that's a worse reference. Of course, Franzia boxed wines, that's not as good an entryway.
I blame Elton John.
You blame Elton John.
That great line, I get juiced on Matus just hang loose.
Well, there you go. Listen, if Elton John got you started on Matus as opposed to some other stuff, it's funny because I always think of it, not Elton, but I think about Billy Joel, and I'm like, the scenes from Italian Restaurant, like, when people listened to that and went out for a bottle of rosé, like, what did they get? You know? Because I started listening to The Stranger in the mid-80s, and I hate to think that I would end up with, like, a Behringer White Zinfandel and be like, really, Billy? Thanks for the good advice.
And a couple of paintings from Sears.
That's right.
And a big water bed that they
someday,
bought with the bread.
Someday we're going to have a top song list, and we're going to fight about it, but that might be my top.
Love that song.
So Portugal, remember when we were talking about the Iberian Peninsula, right? What happened? The dictator Franco in Spain from, I think it was 1938, I think it was the same year my dad was born, until 1975 when he died. This man basically shut down this country from the rest of Europe.
He's still dead.
Which one, Elton John or Franco?
Franco.
Good. I hope Elton's still with us. Because Spain was shut off, Portugal was shut off. Portugal was really shut off. Portugal was so shut off that only now are we starting to get really, like, interesting wines from there. Not that they were really creating a lot of interesting wines, mind you. That has also come with the opening to not only just the markets, but also the winemaking skill of a lot of the other European, specifically winemakers. They've gone and actually, you know, sent their winemakers to oenology schools in places like France and Italy, and have come back and they're starting to make much more sophisticated wines than they were making back then. But the isolation, I can't hammer it home enough. That's the reason you don't know these grape names. That's the reason you don't, and people just don't know Portugal. They know Lisbon, or maybe they know Port. They know Port. You know, everybody knows Port, but not everybody knows what it is. But fortunately, we've covered that already a couple months ago, so I'm not going to get too into Port right now. I want to talk about some of the other regions of Portugal that I want you to kind of keep your eye out for and what you're going to get from them. Now, what we're drinking today is from the northernmost part of Portugal. We've had wines from here again. This is Vinho Verde, which is probably the second most well-known wine from Portugal. This is Broadbent Vinho Verde. It's a wonderful low-alcohol wine, although it's starting to creep up in alcohol because they're starting to learn really how to make wine up in this place. So why is it called Vinho Verde, or green wine, yeah? The Minho region, where it's grown, is actually the wettest region in all of Portugal. Now, the Minho region is divided from Spain by the Minho River, and just north of that river is Rias Baixas, that we've sampled wines from, the grape Albarinho in Spain, or Alfarinho in Portugal, is grown in this region, and that is considered sort of the most elegant and lofty grape. But a lot of the other grapes that you see in this region, Zal, Lourero, Trajadura, which is the same as Tresadura in Spain, Arinto, these grapes were sort of everywhere, and they were allowed to grow not in what you'd consider proper vineyards, but they were allowed to sort of grow freely and grow up trees and grow around boulders, and they, you know, the trees were their pruning mechanism, and they'd go so and the vines were allowed to go everywhere, which means that the energy of the vine was going into growing the vine itself. It was going into kind of everywhere except the grapes. Now, what happens when you have grapes on a vine like that? They don't ripen. And these guys still wanted to get their drink on. So when they would crush these grapes and create wine, the alcohol percentage wasn't very high, but also the taste of it was green. It was kind of not ripe. So it was, higher in acidity, lower in sugar. And that was okay for them. Because, it was hot and they just, again, they wanted to kind of have something to drink. But now what you're seeing is far more proper trellising, keeping these grapes above the ground, keeping them ripening in the sun, keeping them from mildew. Of course, when you're in a wet region, you have, fungal and mildew problems. So they're really trying to combat that in very basic ways. Trellising a grape is, it's been done forever, but they just kind of didn't do it. So now you're seeing, Vino Verdes of some quality. So do check them out when you're out and about. And again, today we're drinking the Broadbent Vino Verde, which is just lovely. It's got a little trapped CO2 in there. It's wonderful on a hot day, which is exactly why I brought it, because it's kind of gross out. I'm sure you've noticed.
Mm.
The next major region that I want to talk about is the region that the port grapes come from, but I want to talk about the region itself. It's the Douro Valley. So now we're a little farther south where the Douro River of Spain enters Portugal, and it's called the Douro there. And it's a very lovely, windy river. And in the Douro Valley, it is extraordinarily beautiful. However, it has been extraordinarily effective in cutting the riverbank. So the slopes in the Douro Valley... The Douro Valley was basically inhospitable and impossible to get to until industrialization happened. However, that didn't stop people from actually terracing it. So the slopes, there was almost no soil, and the slopes were really steep. So what they have done is created these magnificent terraces to hold soil. And they were like 3 feet wide, and now with industrialization, you see some much wider terraces built with bulldozers. But the point is, they basically created something out of nothing. And that is where the grapes for not only port are grown and made into port and then shipped downriver. And remember, they basically start fermenting the grapes, cut it off with a neutral brandy, and raise the alcohol level. So you've got this sort of sweet, high alcohol thing. And they ship it down river to the city of Oporto, hence the name, and the neighboring village of Vila Nova de Gaia to age. But they're also creating a lot of serious still wines these days, and that's what I want to call your attention to. There's really, really magnificent still white and red wines being made from the major port houses that are not port, and those you should check out. I only have a couple more minutes, so I really want to get into just the last couple of places that you should keep in mind. The Douro region, DAO, and it is contiguous with the Beirada region. The Douro is far and away the most recognizable region for red wine. Why? Because it has very loose regulation, so it has a lot of international varietals planted there too. So the wines that have been coming to America that Americans have kind of latched onto are these bigger reds from this region, and a lot of them have Syrah and Merlot and things like that. But they also have a lot of native varietals. They're worth checking out, but do be aware that they vary in quality quite a lot, so you should ask your friendly wine merchant. There's also Alentejo, which was mostly large wine concerns, but is now seeing, especially in the northern part, which is called Porto Alegre, a lot of really, really interesting whites and reds made out of Alicante Busquet, which is one of the only red grapes that has red flesh and red juice. And then there's Madeira, which is fortified wine made in the same way as port, but then it is fortified by heat. And it was found that on long voyages into the tropics back several centuries ago, that it would fortify itself, and that's how they discovered how to fortify Madeira. is the heat of the tropics. Nowadays they use fire in a controlled condition, but you know, it's kind of cool. Anyway, so we're running out of time. I do want to remind you all, in August, our tasting is on the 15th from 5 to 7 p.m. Details TBA, but we're trying to line up maybe a nice guest for that. And we will see you here next week for, I guess we're going to move on to Italy because it's a new month.
Excellent.
My goodness. Cool. Well, thank you all. We'll see you next time. Cheers.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Mann, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street, downtown Bangor.